Hi, and welcome to the Changes Ahead podcast.
Giving space to the often unheard questions,
doubts,
hopes,
and challenges facing the church in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Kathy, and we invite you to join us as we imagine the changes ahead.
This is a really fun episode for me. Paul is such a great mate. We've known each other 15 years, and being a part of some of his journey and watching what he's been doing in the community and just his passion for the people on the margins, it's infectious. So I think this conversation for me was just filled with hope. And it's so great to engage with someone who is so filled with hope in the local church. And I thought I should just acknowledge as well that because of our friendship, I do give Paul a bit of grief, particularly at the beginning, about his wonderful accent. So I know him really well. I love him dearly.
I think it just showed the great affection that you had for each other.
Yeah.
And I just want to echo the sentiments of what you've said about this is such an engaging conversation, and I came away really encouraged as well. I really enjoyed how Paul riffed off a comment that I made about what kind of relational community are we inviting people into, and then he really expanded with these ideas about the breakdown of the village. And if we were to do an inventory in our household of how many individual villages we belong to, he said, it would be mental. And so the thought was, no wonder we have no capacity to mentor one another. And he leaves us with a challenge about how do we simplify our lives so that we can make more space and room for each other. So we invite you to listen in.
Who's your team? Who are you doing this with? And I think that the solo leader or the solo person is just a recipe for a disaster or burnout or worse. We haven't critiqued our own lives and simplified our lives enough and cut some old ties to make space to disciple each other properly.
Well, Paul, welcome to the Changes Ahead podcast. It's really exciting to get a chance to speak to you, hear some of your journey, and kind of share some of the story, I suppose, of your life and kind of how we've intersected. We met within the Baptist space. You're now within the Anglican space, and I often say all the best Anglicans used to be Baptists, so we've got one of the good ones here.
No comment,
but yeah, welcome. It's so good to see you and to have this time together.
That's great. Great to be on this award-winning podcast, by the way. Congratulations on that. I see that. I was amazed, actually, by how many Baptist podcasts there are. Like, it is phenomenal. Yeah. It's like you guys are podcast junkies and you are the drug of choice. So well done to Changes Ahead on being the drug of choice.
Thank you.
It's great to be here. Lovely to be here.
Very kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So, Paul, we met probably, it's a good 15 or so years ago at the church that you were pastoring. And I have been long fascinated with you, not just because of your accent that is difficult to understand at times. Actually, this is a good time for me to plug the fact that we do transcribe our episodes.
So, it's not going to help you, man. Like, do you individually transcribe them? Because if it's Google, it doesn't work. It's shocking.
No. I do it myself to make it accessible, and it might be useful for all of us today because of your wonderful accent. So anyway, so Paul, as we begin, would you tell us something of your journey into faith and how things have changed for you over the years of your discipleship journey, of your following Jesus, and perhaps leading into some of the work that you're doing now around the coffee brand that you are distributing, mm-hmm. the Common Good Coffee. That's a big question. Yeah. Tell us your story.
No, cool. No, that's great. I'll try and distill this down. So look, I kind of pretty much came to faith when I was 18. I've been brought up in a Christian family. Didn't really go to church at all. But when we were 11 years old, my dad's a fisherman, got offered a job in New Zealand and came out to Nelson, New Zealand, and went to a little place called Stoke Baptist. And I had a really positive experience of church there. And something shifted, or something ignited in me, I suppose, where I thought, oh, this might be a thing, might be legit. And I really appreciated some of the people that took us under the wing. There's an older couple, but also the pastor at that point, Wayne Fraser, as a quite a young pastor at that point. I just probably looked up to him. But after that, went back to Scotland, went back to no church, and just kind of didn't think much about it, and was probably quite anti the Christian thing, mainly because of people around me in Scotland at that time. But when I was 18, I was probably questioning again, and I was about to go off to uni to do art, and was taking a year out from school. I was just kind of working, making money, enjoying life, enjoying my time with my girlfriend, all that kind of bits and pieces. Everything was going well, but I was quite depressed, actually, and I was quite an existential, probably kind of 18-year-old, you know, kind of thinking the big things. What's this all for? What's this all about? And probably looking back, was in a place of increasing despair about what's the point. And so I was kind of questioning. It was the days of dial-up internet. Remember those ones, dial-up? And I was starting to try to explore, you know, the big questions of life. What's the meaning? And looked at everything apart from Christianity because I thought, I don't want to bother that rubbish. And around about that time, it was my 18th birthday. I wasn't a big drinker. I was more into my sport, my football and things. But I went out to my 18th birthday and we're out in the town. And I was about to get thrown out of a nightclub for spewing in a pint glass of all things. And just before that happened, long story short, I was on the dance floor, very aware of what was happening around me, and suddenly had this full-on vision of Jesus. Like, full-on, it's like everything's still there, but there's Jesus kind of opened up, Jesus, and he's got his arm around this guy. And the guy's got his arm around Wayne Fraser from when I was 11. And Jesus, who I can't really see, he's just so full of light. He says to me, Paul, I want you to lead my church. And I'm just like, what the hell? I don't even believe in you. And then I realized, well, I'm speaking to him. I want you to lead my church, he says again. And then I do what anyone in that situation does, and I spewed into the pint glass and filled it up, and then got beaten up and thrown out. But that at that moment, I just knew I'd encountered God, and I knew I'd encountered Jesus experientially. It was such a big moment, and I knew I was part of something bigger than myself. And for 2 weeks, I wrestled with it. I only told my girlfriend at the time, who was really kind, but probably thought I was going mental. And about 2 weeks later, in my bedroom by myself, I just broke down crying. I prayed. I didn't really know how to pray, but I just prayed and said, God, I'm yours. I know you're real. And there was tears of kind of like, what now? But also tears of relief and joy that there was something bigger I was part of. And I made a deal, though, and I said, God, if you want me to follow you, I need a fresh start. I'm not telling anyone I'm a Christian. And 2 weeks after that prayer, my mum and dad, who'd been trying for about 7 years to get back to New Zealand, got a phone call to say, oh, you've finally been accepted after 3 attempts to New Zealand. And I was asked, do you want to go to New Zealand or do you want to stay? And I said, I'll take that ticket. So I took that ticket, went to New Zealand, threw myself into church, it's the local church, Baptist church, got involved with youth work straight from the get-go, preaching straight from the get-go almost. It was kind of crazy, got baptised. And about 3 months into that, went to my first ever youth camp, and sorry, this is going to land somewhere here, but at that youth camp, it was a combined youth camp up at Kaiteriteri. On the second night, the Pentecostal preacher was preaching again, same kind of message. I was a bit bored of it. I started to pray, God, if you want me to give up my art and go study the Bible at Bible college or something, because I don't know anything. I don't know it. I was hungry, but I don't know anything really, and no one's giving me great answers to stuff. If you wanted to study the Bible, give me a sign. As literally as I'm praying that prayer, the guy says, oh, I've gone over time. But before we go and have lunch or kai through in the hall, we've got one notice. And this guy gets up to give a notice. And he gives a notice about Bible college and about pastoral leadership and training to lead churches. Everything I want to hear, then I suddenly realise that the guy that's speaking is Wayne Fraser, who had seen in the vision in a nightclub. Well, 5-6 months before, and who I hadn't seen since I was 11 and was no longer a pastor at the little church in Nelson then. But it was this kind of moment that just completely changed the direction of my life, both in terms of, you know, not just my faith, but in terms of my vocation, I suppose. Does that make sense?
It does.
So it was really hard to deny that stuff at that point. You're kind of on a trajectory. Which I've seen quite a few of those trajectories recently, even in folk coming to faith that are wee Wharekirikia here in Whanganui. But that was the beginning, and that was 22 years ago, and it's been about what does it look like to continue to follow and surround yourself with a crew of people who are on that Jesus journey day in, day out. And so there's been a big journey since then, obviously. Yeah, that's the start.
And so some of that journey did take you to kind of start with a crew in Mount Roskill, which is kind of where we got to know each other. And you kind of started to explore, is it social enterprise or business that is beneficial to not just the owners of the business or those kind of thoughts? Yeah, can you talk to us a little bit about that and kind of what you're up to now in that space?
So just a quick, I'll keep this really short, but I went to Carey Baptist College for a few years and then went to Mangere Baptist for a few years. After that, I didn't take a job, but felt like I was supposed to go and be part of this missional restart community in Mangere with some friends. And I just got my heart broken for the people on the edge and the poor and all that stuff there. And it was really pushing my buttons, and then obviously ran away and took a job at Roskill Baptist and learned about God's redemption when you run away from a leadership position and you have to kind of work through that. But end up in Roskill, and again, but what had kind of been formed in me in the Mangere season and even the Carey Baptist season of just what does it look like to give your best for those on the edge with a crew was big. And so I came into Roskill with that heartbeat, and living in that neighborhood, obviously as a Baptist minister part-time, but also this other big piece that happened that you were involved with, obviously, too, was the missional community piece, getting involved in our neighborhood, simplifying our lives, making space for our neighbors, and just kind of getting our heart broken for just folk that do it tough, right? And what does it look like to make faith accessible and faith spaces accessible to those who don't know Jesus but are probably really hungry, but don't have the lingo, don't have the language for it, don't have the tradition and their kite to move into it easily or come into an existing culture. So I was wrestling with all that stuff. But through that whole season, I had also been captivated probably since early on in my journey by how much Jesus talked about money. In fact, talks about money more than he does about prayer in the gospel. So there was this thing of like, how do you prophetically do something around money and business and in a very capitalist kind of, time in history, do stuff that provokes and causes intrigue for the gospel in that space, that brings the worlds of the rich and the poor together, not just in terms of faith space, but also in terms of commerce and business, and kind of ignites the imagination and gets people excited and bringing those worlds together. Is that kind of, does that make sense? Yeah, so all that was happening, and we had a crack at things. Some things worked, some things didn't.
And Ken, there's so much we can pick up here,
Yes, sir.
but I'm no, it, no, it's fabulous. I love what you've done in terms of you're sitting in that space of having your heart broken. That's a really difficult space. But then to have this creativity of sparking the imagination of how we can join money and business together with still being able to support people on the edges. I mean, tell us about that, because that is encouraging, because it would be really easy to stay overwhelmed. Your heart gets broken. How do we even make a difference? Where do we even begin? And it seems like you've allowed this creative imagination to take you in a different way to be able to, be able to do something in that space of supporting people. I love that, because that seems hopeful.
Sorry, there's multiple things pinging in my head. I'm an external processor, and it's a problem. Right. So a few things. One of the things, so I remember I used to be a big reader in my early days of Christianity, like John Stott, right? I remember when John Stott had this line where he said the church in the West will be judged by how it treated the majority world, basically. And that always stuck with me. It doesn't matter how much I tried to get rid of it. It was this thing of like, that piece there was big. There's also a thing for me around, we were doing fostering long term. We've done a lot of youth work stuff with crews and whatever else, and just seeing the lack of opportunities for awesome young people who just didn't fit. And so there there was a piece around there about, oh, what's about for the local ones as well that are on the edge that just need some encouragement and extra support. So there's all those bits on the in the mix, in terms of like business. How do we either try and see that as an opportunity, as an exciting risk-taking journey to kind of respond to that, whether it's the overseas or the local or both at the same time, which we've tried to do. So there's that piece. But there's also the piece of probably my approach to following Jesus, which is that piece after the resurrection where it says Jesus has walked ahead of you into, you'll find him up there in the city type thing. I think there's always been a thing for me of every day, you know, in our liturgies and stuff, our morning prayers and things, we have this thing that basically veers toward that is God has walked ahead of us. And it's not going to be easy, but he's walked ahead of us and there's opportunities to bring his goodness and his reality and his kingdom to flourish more in those spaces. And every day that's instilled in my morning prayer, in our community's morning prayer. And I think often people get disillusioned because they already hold an illusion. And I don't hold an illusion about how tough it's going to be and that actually God's not going to make it all right all the time or often even, but he is still able. And with God, we can do some beautiful, stunning things, even more outrageous things than Jesus could. That's what Jesus says to us, right? So I probably hold that posture and with a crew of people walk into that space and grieve what we need to grieve at the end of the day or the end of the week, but celebrate what we need to celebrate or what we should celebrate at the end of the day or end of the week. And I think, you know, whether that's business or church or whatever, I think that's a good theological framework or praxis to hold.
So you've mentioned a few times the importance of a crew. Talk to us about that. Like, why is a crew so important to you in this journey that you're on?
One of the things that I think we do well and has really been drilled home over the years is that who's your team? It doesn't need to be a paid team, but who's your team? Who are you doing this with? Like, and I think the solo leader or the solo person is just a recipe for a disaster or burnout or worse. You know, Jesus sent folk out twos and threes as leaders and then as churches, the bigger thing. But I just think you just can't do any of this without a team, without a solid team. The Christian journey is action reflection. So what's Jesus inviting us into today or this week to be part of or to minister to or to interact with or whatever? And then we reflect on it together. But often I think Christians, the ones that are really going for it, often are solitary. And then, you know, within 10 years, they're no longer on the Jesus waka. Oh. Because they've not got a container of faith to do that as part of. And I don't know, push back or does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. That's just I think just hearing you repeat that over, you know, and a couple of those different stories you're telling, I think just really highlights the importance of what you've just said, and that we can't do this alone, especially when you're engaging in those spaces where people are stuck in the margins for all sorts of reasons, right? And so I think that's, yeah, as you kind of just casually mentioned that, my crew, I think really helpful to kind of unpack that a little bit more and to highlight the importance of that. So yeah, thank you.
And could I add my thoughts around it is I think too, we're all looking for relational healing, you know, places to belong and to really flourish. And so if we don't have a team that is practicing that, then I've always said, well, what are we inviting people into?
Yeah, 100%.
You know, because people are longing for that. And so we're actually also doing it for ourselves to model this relational way of being. And that's also part of the mission, the journey is embodying it.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that piece of like, what is it I'm inviting folk into? And what is the life that we're calling people into with Jesus? Like, if we are not modeling that as communities, whether it's small missional communities or bigger, then what are we doing? Like, honestly, what are we doing? And I think that's a big, like, I don't know if people actually critique and reflect on that enough, and church leaders don't maybe
think
enough.
So
there's a big piece there. And I was doing a workshop on the breakdown of the village, and the last, 150 years or whatever. Marva Dawn and that did a really good piece in it back in the day. But basically, since the Industrial Revolution, right, you had the kind of the small village family unit and the little village then becomes the local shoemaker goes off to work in the shoe factory 10 kilometres down the road via train, right? So you've got the Industrial Revolution just instantly takes the, maybe at that point, the father away from the village, and they've got a separate community that doesn't interact with their household or village community, right? And then you've also got the Second World War that comes in, and that is a big moment. And it's a really great moment because suddenly women are pushed into all the places of work that the men were because they're all fighting, right? And along with that, the right to vote. And also suddenly this is great and the men come back from war and suddenly you've got that becomes normalised. You've got dads away to work 10k down the road and mum's away to work 15k down the road or whatever. And they're coming home with different villages that they've got in their mind and heart that is not connected or overlapping and is an extra thing. Mm-hmm. And then you've also then got the kind of the automobile and the professionalisation of sports clubs and social clubs. So suddenly I'm no longer playing football for my local pub team. I'm going to play, you know, representative football 15-20k down the road with such and such. And so you've got that thing that kind of takes off, and the third space of cafes that take off as well, and the automobile gives you more individualistic freedom. So you've got this kind of piece. Then you've got technological revolution that kicks in. And with that thing of suddenly I'm caring about the person on Coronation Street or Shortland Street or whatever it is, I'm emotionally invested in their lives where I wasn't before, right? And then that morphs into the internet where suddenly I've got a Facebook community, and in my Facebook community I'm connecting with my family from flipping the overseas or whatever, and I'm keeping that village alive. And or maybe we've got kind of the movement of people around the country. So say I leave Auckland and come to Whanganui. Potentially, I've got my Auckland community, I've got my wider family community, that's number two, I've got my work community, that's number three, I've got my faith community, but it's a different faith community to my neighbour's faith community because I don't like that church, I go to that church, so that's the number fourth community. I've got my pub or slash cafe community, maybe some of those cafe community folk are kind of overlap people from my church, maybe, whatever. And then I've got, you know, and you start going through the list, and that's just one person in the household, and we're not even talking about blended families at the moment, right? But you look at a family within your church, and more to do the kind of wealthy or kind of successful, likable people in your church, and you start asking them, how many village communities do you have in your home between mum, dad, the kids, and how many of them overlap? And I guarantee the number is mental, and they hardly overlap. And then we expect to then do discipleship and to welcome in someone from the edge who might be struggling with meth or something less dramatic than that even, with their family, and they're come to faith, and we're going to get alongside them. But actually, I can only give them an hour every month, whereas Jesus seemed to give a crap load of hours to his disciples every day and did 4 years of it before they were ready to be sent off, right? And it's just, there's a piece there around, yeah, what are we inviting people into? I don't even think we know, because we haven't critiqued our own lives and simplified our lives enough and cut some old ties to make space to disciple each other properly into the future. And I'm not even talking, I'm talking individually right now. I'm not even talking as faith communities. We're not even taking that as a faith community. And so there's a thought.
There is a thought.
Right.
Yeah. So even to recognize that, just to even begin to do that kind of inventory, which you've just said, that would be really fascinating for families to do. Because, I mean, Stephen and I talk about this. We know that people are so stretched.
Aye.
They just don't have any capacity.
They're exhausted, they're stretched.
Yeah.
They're lonely because actually you can't really have hardly any real relationships when your life's like that. I mean, that's just like, so I can't say as a lead church leader, if we talk about church leadership, right? Say I catch up with my core team once, or maybe as individuals once a month, right? And maybe do a group thing once every couple of weeks if I'm really onto it. Then that I've got enough time to catch up and say, hey, how are you doing? How's the stress? How's the anxiety stuff going? Maybe we're bold enough to go into that. But by the end of the hour and a half, our time's up and we haven't even got to the real important question, which is, hey, what is your image of God? How would you describe what Jesus is like or what God is like in your mind and heart? Or how does God see you? How would God describe you? Like, you ask that question to people start to cry, right? Because they haven't been asked it in freaking 10 years, right? But we don't even have a time to get to that as communities, as far as individuals. And it's just like, that is an issue. But people are desperate to have that, but there's no time and space for it. That's so a thing of my last probably 15 years has been how to respond to that and how to shape life in a way that lives well in light of that challenge that has never been known in human history before, not to this
No.
extent.
So you're right, we even need to just take stock, don't we?
Yeah. And realize that actually our kingdom community life following Jesus is so much more attractive in that reality. Like what Jesus calling it is so attractive and intriguing in light of that reality that most people find themselves in the West. That's awesome.
And I was just thinking too, like the team that you've created, is this where you're experiencing this kind of community that you talk about that is really attractive?
Hi. So I'm part of Urban Vision, which is a missional order of the Anglican Church, and we're big on three things, which is living deep lives of belonging together, Jesus focused, obviously, life of prayer, and giving our best for those on the edge. So, classic prayer, community, mission. And so we're pretty full on with that. So I've always tried to, figure out how do we contextualize that. But we've also always had a team that we do that with. Yeah. And even amongst the challenges and the heartaches and the disappointments, if it's not something that's like life-giving and drawing me into Jesus, then that's like, well, what am I doing? Because this is not going to be something I want to bring other people into, whether it's a church or a missional community. So there's that piece.
One of the many things that you're involved in with your crew, and actually there's links into Baptist spaces with a couple of kind of cafes that around the country that have been started by Baptists, with Crave up in Morningside in Auckland and Addington down in Christchurch. But you actually are the distributor of some incredible coffee. And so tell us a little bit about the Common Good Coffee story and how that is unfolding.
Yep, Common Good Coffee, three times as good as regular coffee. Subscribe online at commongoodcoffee.nz if you haven't already. So most of my life I've been bivocational, so or tent making or whatever, and so always been involved in the hospitality industry and had an interest in coffee for a long time now. Used to work, for example, with the guys at Crave Cafe, Baptist lot, for many years, and was had a, some good friendships with the guys that are the team at Addington Coffee Co-op that are also connected with the Baptist Church at Southwest. And I think just through that friendship and that involvement, I remember Aunt Watts drawing us together and going, "Look, we're all involved in this space of hospitality and cafes and third space and giving back to our local neighborhood, and all of us at the same time have an interest in the overseas stuff around, modern day slavery. Why don't we join forces and rebrand a small little coffee company that at that point come together and come up with a national social enterprise, essentially, that offers great tasting coffee but makes a bulk of difference overseas, predominantly in that modern day slavery space and extreme poverty space." And so that's where kind of Common Good Coffee kicked off. And it was kind of creating a brand and a product that was easy for people to have an avenue to get involved with something that's really difficult. Because often you look at these things like, my wife was a lawyer in the anti-trafficking space for a season, right? And so there's that, you get into that story, this feels overwhelming. The statistics are overwhelming. The stories are overwhelming. It's like, where do you begin? And it's just like, well, coffee is a great vehicle to use as a storyteller. It's also something that almost everyone drinks. And so it was about using that business to share good stories, but also make a ton of money for Joya, which used to be Freeset, but Joya in Kolkata and wider than that now, actually, and doing some really beautiful things in places that seem really difficult. I think for us, if we're able to make a difference in places like that, then it gives us hope to make a difference anywhere. Those neighborhoods, the fact that we can see transformation in those places means I can definitely see transformation in my neighborhoods here in Aotearoa. So that's kind of how that kind of kicked off. So it's been three, almost, I think it's 3 years now. Almost, I think it's as of next week, maybe $300,000 given away to that staff. And yeah, it's been good. So it's mostly we're in offices and there's a bunch of churches, some cafes, but mainly in the corporate space. It's been great. Yeah.
So what is it about the, you're talking about, you've got the coffee into corporate spaces, which, yeah, me on my high horse could kind of critique that corporate space and kind of go, oh, yeah, sort of anti-capitalism or whatever, right, if I'm having my rants. But there's something that's captured them enough to go, oh, okay, yeah, we'll get on board with this, yeah, even if it is something as simple and important as coffee. So, yeah, what do you reckon has captured the different corporate spaces that you've gone into to...
I mean, it helps that the coffee is really tasty, right? I mean, we're not going to be running two large cafes if it wasn't, like, two of the largest cafes in New Zealand if it wasn't good. So there's that piece. If it's not great, then let's just close this thing down. We're not relying on charity here. So there's that piece. But I think, like, the reality is whatever space you're in, corporate space, it's made up of individuals. And majority of people are good people. It's just good people. They maybe haven't been thought or critiqued in the way that often we in these podcast spaces critique a lot of things. Not even aware, like, you know, things like fair trade seems like such an old thing to me. For a lot of younger gen, they're not even aware what that is anymore. You know, or the older gen, I mean, we're outside of our little kind of silo of faith communities and stuff and social action and whatever else. People aren't aware, so they're not even aware of some of them are not even aware of the big issues. But when they hear that there's a way to kind of jump on with something that's really accessible, they love that, and it adds value to the culture in their work environment. Brings them a bit of pleasure that no one would ever. I get emails from people saying, "Look, every time I drink your coffee, I enjoy it, but secondly, it just fills me with a bit of hope." This is from people that aren't of faith, right? So that's a lovely thing. Who doesn't want to be part of that tribe?
Yes, and I was thinking too, Paul, I think we underestimate the power of what it does for us when we feel like we're part of doing some good.
Right.
It actually does give us endorphins. It makes us feel good. And so you're giving people an opportunity where they didn't even know there was one, and that's great.
Yeah, and we're designed that way. We're designed to be generous. We're designed to be generous. We're designed to contribute to something beautiful and kingdom-like, whether we realize it or not. And I just think people often jump on when they have the space to hear about it and try it. So, yeah. So, be good.
Wow. There's been a number of challenges that have been either implicit or explicit in what you've said, but I guess this podcast is reflecting on the changes that the church as we know it needs to wrestle with. As we kind of wrap up our time together, what would you love to see? What kind of challenges would you like to give to us directly around how the church needs to change if we're going to be a part of the story of bringing the kingdom, as you have been talking about with Common Good Coffee and obviously with your crew in those spaces focusing on the margins?
Yeah. Things that come to mind, there's at least, you know, obviously I've been part of Catch Network as well with Scotty Reeve, and we've been going around the country a wee bit, meeting different leaders and across denominations. And one of the things that consistently strikes me is just the lack of confidence people have in the good news of Jesus and the kingdom. Like, I remember we had this guy, I think it's Bishop Muru or something, anyway, it's a lovely guy from Kenya who is a church planter, and, you know, he's older and he's planted hundreds of churches, and he was just mentioning how, you know, your church will never be more on fire. This is my words of what I can remember, but your church will never be on fire more than the key leader or leaders. And I get constantly surprised by how apologetic or timid, and I'm not meaning to be like be an ass in that space, right? But just the lack of courage and kind of conviction that folk have around the gospel and the good news of Jesus is concerning. Right? I think that's the big thing. So what does it look like to re-enter a courageous space? I remember when we, I didn't plan to be part of replanting a church up the road here. And we did that largely for free for the first couple of years, right? So you really got to have your conviction about you. When you're doing that, it's been a hard road and it's been very challenging. So another probably podcast session, that one. But I remember when we realised that God had invited us to reopen those doors, and we had our team And we had our first meeting as a team after we had this realization that we had the invitation from some people in the neighborhood to reopen those doors. And we sat down and we were reflecting on that guy's words about, are we confident? And most of us, including myself and Anna, who are the leaders suddenly, going, I don't think we are confident. And then having a bit of a freak out going, well, we're screwed. Because if we're not confident, then, particularly in a neighbourhood like this, people will smell a rat a mile off, right? They'll know you're not authentic and you're not backing it. And so we're like, well, what do we do? Well, there's only one thing we can do. We've got to now commit to being courageous and confident.
Right.
And it sounds outrageous, but there was something about that communal confession and that communal or covenantal recommitment that sparked something in us as a crew that went, let's go for this and let's just go out there, be bold, obviously relational and humble, but be bold and courageous and inviting folk and praying for folk and talking about what we actually believe for ourselves, and hopefully God will show up. And sure enough, God over the years has shown up dramatically. And it's stunning. But I think there's a real problem in Aotearoa around that piece. There's that piece, I think, as well, maybe particularly those who are more pastoral. Obviously, I'm not that pastoral. But pastoral leaders tend to want to get everyone on side and wait until everyone's on the same page. And often then end up giving time to the loudest, most toxic voice and lose what actually the Spirit's up to outside the church, which is where he's mostly at work. And there's an opportunity lost there. And I think we need to commit to not falling into the trap of being insular and going, we're for the neighbourhood. There's nothing that changes a church culture than when you get somebody new that comes to faith and comes in the doors and starts changing the whole corridor and the whole culture of the space. It's outrageous. But if we're just focused on the insular and the inside and on our problems and our differences, whatever else, rather than on the opportunities of what the Spirit's doing out in the community, we've got a problem. And so thinking that through and then taking that through, because I think the Sunday space is really important still. I just think it's a gift. I know I find it bizarre that there's still talk of people critiquing the Sunday piece 20 years on. I mean, I was at Carey, we were critiquing the Sunday space, and folk are still doing it, and like it's a new conversation. It's like, man, we've been hammering that for years. It works. The part that doesn't work is we're not getting out there, inviting folk in it, and letting that define how we do the Sunday part. So does the language of how I speak and what we sing and what we, in terms of liturgy, as Anglicans, we use liturgy, which is a real helpful gift at times. But how does that language, is it language that's used on the street? Do I pray like how I talk to my friend? You know what I mean? We're not thinking that thing through. So when someone comes in, it's catering more to the Christians that have been there for 15, 20 years rather than shifted slightly or to be more kind of welcoming and accessible for those who have no idea. Because we've got 2-3 generations of people that are post-church. They're not even anti-church. The majority of people aren't anti-church even. They don't even know anything about it anymore. 20 years ago, different vibe maybe. But now it's just like the majority of people I go, they have no idea what we think. We have no idea what we do. They have no idea about the problems we face in different denominations. So I just think there's a thing there around, are we actually engaging outside of ourselves and aligning things, whether it's Sunday or through the week, that meets the language and the needs of our neighbourhoods? Because God's up to stuff, but we're not ready often. That's the sad part. We're not ready. And if we did have a bit of revival, that's a dirty word, possibly still, I have no idea in the Baptist world, but let's just say there's a renewal and folk start coming in the doors and you suddenly have 2 families and they've each got 7 or 8 kids, because that's a lot of my neighbourhood. Shucks, I've got my kids' things tripled, quadrupled, and I can't handle it because we're not ready for it. And then we look like Muppets and people go, well, they're a bit weird, and they won't come back. So there's all these challenges, but all because we're not thinking about the opportunity and that God is bringing folk to faith outside of our church doors.
What I was hearing you say is that this good news is generally about caring for people. You're not just going out there to tell them something. You're engaging with loving people, and it sounds like there's justice, You're really meeting people where they're at. I think that's the difference. That's attractive.
Aye. And I think you're causing intrigue as you do that. Like we're called to love folk, not convert people. But as you love people, as you give your best for others, as you open up space in your life to have genuine friendship with folk that is mutual, your life will cause intrigue, and there's opportunity to then talk about what drives, what's the driver behind that stuff that causes intrigue, and that's Jesus and his kingdom that often we so normalize that we forget how outrageously bloody good it is and how so different it is to the majority of folk around about me. And so you end up having transformative conversations and opportunities to pray or even lead people into that relationship with Jesus, which we kind of scoff at often. But to somebody that doesn't know that stuff, it's just massive. It's stunning. It's beautiful. And why are we not? Well, if we forget how stunning and countercultural that is, we're probably spending too much time just with the Christians rather than as Christians, as teams, going out and giving our best outside of ourselves. You know, I've had folk come to faith this last year and a bit, and I was saying to Stephen, we're out around for a meal a few weeks ago at his house, saying it is so cool that people still come to faith and their lives are completely changed and they're buzzing about it. Like it's happening, and it's happening quite a lot in different spaces round about. And often we've had nothing, and actually we've often had nothing to do with it. The piece for us with our church, I can think of three in the last, actually there's been five folk coming through the last wee while, but three significant ones in the last year that were outrageous, that really we had very little to do with at all. The only thing we had was we had trust in the neighbourhood. So when somebody had an experience with Jesus that was kind of outrageous and outside the box, a friend or a neighbour or a partner said, I heard good things about that church, you should go speak to them. We had built the trust, and we'd been faithful in speaking about this stuff at different times, but we had the trust so that when they had the Jesus encounter, like I did in that nightclub, they get plugged into a faith community where we can help them then move forward in that journey of being a son or a daughter of God. And I think that's how we should position ourselves, is to be expectant and prepared to journey with folk as they come to know Jesus and have their lives transformed for good.
You've mentioned a couple of times, that's another whole podcast episode, and there probably quite easily is, but we are coming to the end of our time, sadly, together. Maybe just one more plug for Common Good Coffee, because I can attest, you know, we get Common Good Coffee. It's what we drink at home. It's what we drink at church. So I encourage all of our listeners to get involved. $5 of every kilo you buy goes straight to Joya. Doesn't go anywhere near Paul. So if you don't like what he said, it's, at least his money's going to a good place over to Joya. So yeah, Paul, tell us, how can we get in touch and support Common Good Coffee?
Yeah, obviously you can buy it for your home, but if for a church, you know, we do organizational rates, so we get a discounted rate and a really easy ordering platform. So just please email us at hello@commongoodcoffee.nz, and one of our team from around the country will get in touch, hook you up. But we just love to have more communities on the journey with us, because I just think, you know, there's something quite stunning in numbers when we do that, and you get to be part of a cool story. It's great. Thank you too much.
Again, Paul, thank you for your time today. It's great to hear the challenge, and just to people who are just hearing your voice, I hope they can hear what we can see in your face as you're talking, the passion for Jesus and his kingdom, and for seeing people's lives transformed. So it's been awesome to hear from you. And again, thanks heaps for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Changes Ahead podcast.
If that resonated with you,
or you've got thoughts about the changes ahead for the church,
we'd love to hear from you.
So get in touch on Instagram or Facebook at Changes Ahead Cast,
or email us at thechangesaheadpodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.